Where were you in the late 60s, 70s, and even the 80s? If you were in Oxford Street, you were in the very hub of an emerging rock and roll scene that changed the face of artistic Sydney, perhaps forever. On this rock and roll walk of fame and shame, we take you up Oxford Street from Darlinghurst all the way to Paddington to visit the venues and sounds of past decades with a podcast featuring Radio Birdman, Mental as Anything, The Missing Links, and many more. Oxford Street, Darlinghurst really begins at Whitlam Square, itself a name redolent with memories of happy, often excessive and sometimes wasted times. Travelling up the left-hand side of Oxford Street, the one with even numbers, or the northern side, we travel past the Burdekin Hotel, and opposite Pelican Street, almost, we find some contemporary music spaces, including Spectrum at number 34 Oxford and the Oxford Art Factory at numbers 38 to 46. Both are essential places to visit in Sydney's nightlife, as music and arts maestro Mark Gerber explains.
Well, the background of Spectrum is really just, I guess, the launch pad of what I've created here. It's the younger brother or sister or whatever of the Oxford Art Factory. But yeah, I guess the Oxford Art Factory now is like one of the, well, if not main venues in Australia, it's one of the main venues in Sydney, sure. Because I see a strong connection between art and music appearing as well. I think a lot of bands are far more conscious of art images and their graphics and how they present themselves. You know, I've been saying it for a while now, that art's the new rock and roll.
As we walk up past clubs like the Q Bar, across the road on the south side of the street, on the corner of Oxford and Riley Street, sits the music store called Hum. And it was above that store that some of Australia's most imaginative musicians used to gather and play. The venue was Adam's Apple, a so-called disco that became the haunt of hippies, hipsters, jazz crossovers and folk leftovers. More about that scene later when we get to Whitty's Wine Bar. Moving up Oxford Street towards Taylor Square and crossing Crown Street, we come to Betty's Soup Kitchen at number 84 Oxford, a building that housed French's Tavern, also ostensibly a wine bar, that gave so many bands a paying gig early on. Midnight Oil, Cold Chisel were there early in their careers. Even Old 55 played their first gig there. It was also a dark, sweaty venue with a strong blues influence, so there were resident bands like the Four Day Riders and the Mangrove Boogie Kings. The ABC Stuart Matchy remember that time in Oxford Street when a new wave of bands were getting live exposure for the very first time.
I can remember French's Tavern, which was a wine bar. Mm-hmm. So, which is sort of strange to go out to a place to basically drink cider, I think people drank, rather than wine. But I remember seeing Midnight Oil there way back in the... given it's a sort of a tiny place downstairs and a really small stage. And the one thing I can remember about it, apart from them sort of filling the stage totally, was over on the left-hand side they had a little sort of a tin with Midnight Oil cut out of the tin and a candle inside. So that was the Midnight Oil. Other bands that used to play there were like the Four Day Riders, who are sort of a bluesy band, and then sort of folk singer types as well. So having a rock band in there was kind of weird, and I think the reason was because Midnight Oil did their own bookings and things, and so they were looking for venues other than the normal rock venues, so they sort of turned French's into one.
In the 60s, many of the venues of the day were dry zones, alcohol-free environments, one of them called, unimaginatively, Beetle Village. It was at 124 Oxford Street, and now a venue, unimaginatively, called Palms. Although supposedly a dry zone, Beetle Village featured many of the wildest bands of the 60s. The Creatures, The Throb, The Showmen, even the soon-to-be world-famous Easy Beats. And the wildest of all, The Missing Links. They were wild. They've been described as the missing link between rock and roll, blues, R&B, punk and psychedelia. More dangerously, they're also described as too loud, too outrageous, too unstable, too dirty, too scary, just too much entirely. Well, we tracked down lead singer Andy Anderson, then known as Andy James, to find out just who, or rather what, were the missing links.
Well, downstairs, it was always a very sweaty, dark place. The Missing Links went over very well there. I seem to remember a wire thing that we used to hang off, a wire type of roof over the stage or something. Used to hang off that, because we used to smash our instruments up and all that sort of jazz. Yeah, and we get very carried away, but there was a very strong support there at Beetle Village. And we would just sort of come in amidst the crowd. There weren't any, you know, like sound checks and stuff like you have these days. So you just come in, set up, and turn us on, and we'd go ape, basically ape. Pretty Things were a band, The Who were a band that we knew of. We got very much into the feedback, letting the guitars wah, you know, letting the guitars feedback with the drums underneath. I think Chris might have got Mama Keep Your Big Mouth Shut, which is on the album. I think he might have got it from the Pretty Things, but also Bo Diddley. We were going through a lot of Bo Diddley stuff, but by the time we got through with it, it sounded like something from Mars. And then we turned the recording company, we turned it backwards. They were playing, we went, what's that? And it sounded like, because you wouldn't understand all the music, the words were backwards, and we went, that's what I was after with the jungle sounds, the jungle mixed with space. And I think we said, play that. And that's right, it wasn't feedback that we were first at, it was the played backwards loops, that's what it was. No one knew what to expect, including us. You know, you'd have John feeding back and you'd have Doug smashing his guitar. I'd be smashing cymbals. Hutch would get off the drum sometimes and just be bashing things. I'd get on the... I mean, it just got all mixed up, hanging from... It was an amazing... I think men's groups could do with this these days, what we were doing. Because there was structure. And at one stage, you know, I mean, I was stoned out of my mind one time, and it was just, I was just watching this madness go on, and the audience is going to say, it became this happening. Curtains parted and then we come on and the audience pulled back in horror of what they were seeing, because it was a pretty weird sight, these maniacs coming at you. But it was very loud. I don't know whether we were forerunners of anything. At the time, you know, it's like that. It's like at the time you're going through, everyone goes, oh, you guys were legendary. But we were just a garage band going up. It was a madhouse.
As we near Taylor Square, at number 134 to be exact, we find the Oxford Hotel. It's a venue devoted for many years to the sometimes sordid, sometimes exalted rock and roll experiences that entertained Sydney for decades. Today, it's the more sophisticated Supper Club, or sometimes called Will and Toby's. But back in late 1976, members of one of Australia's most extreme and now most legendary bands approached the owners of the Oxford Tavern, as it was known then. Radio Birdman was the band that named the Oxford Tavern venue the Funhouse. It was an Iggy Pop-inspired name that became the most memorable and revolutionary venue of the era. The cost of admission? Between 75 cents and a dollar at most. Lead singer for Radio Birdman, Rob Younger, remembers those days well.
What happened was when Lou Reed came out in 74, I think it was, Dennis went out to the airport to meet him with a friend, you know, just to see him arrive and all this. He eventually got talking to him, and he was saying, you know, see those jerking his thumb over his shoulder, saying, there's fucking animals, journalists, you know, going on. Anyway, Dennis said he was in a band, he gave him one of our t-shirts. So he said he might come along to the gig, which we had at the Funhouse. Well, the Oxford. And we didn't really have it, but we had it sort of accessed. We had played there a bit, you know, in the past. So we went to the management of the Oxford and told him that Lou Reed was going to come along. He may even do a song, but nonetheless, he was probably going to turn up, and we'd tell people, therefore there'd be a lot of people there. So they gave us a gig. And a lot of people did come. Of course, Lou Reed didn't come. We didn't expect him to. At the end, it wasn't until the end of about 76 that we actually called at the Funhouse and put up a sign. It was the same as on the Stooges album.
Crossing Taylor Square, our walk of fame and shame takes us past what once was Gilligan's Island, an isolated outcrop which became home for the delirious, the drunk, or the down and out. We also walk past the home of Justice of the Darlinghurst Courthouse building, where our national poet Henry Lawson once spent a weekend, dubbing it Starvinghurst Jail. But in the late 60s, there was nothing very legal about lots of activities in this area. It was sort of Sydney's own version of San Francisco's hippie locale, Haight-Ashbury. Musically, folk music was giving way to more hybrid forms of blues, folk, jug band and rock, all fusing into a healthy and very vibrant live scene. At 207 Oxford is the well-known Bookshop Darlinghurst. Now, in the 60s and 70s at 207 was Whitty's Wine Bar, the centre of this musical scene, featuring bands such as the Starving Wild Dogs and the original Battersea Heroes. Terry Darmody was from the original Battersea Heroes, and he recalls the scene around Whitty's, like jug and jazz.
And jug band music seemed to really do the trick with that. You know, it was funny, it was witty, kind of related in an innocent way to a world that was actually a lot more dangerous in a sense. Those wine bars were home to a lot of the trad jazz bands. Like, I think the first gig that we did at French's, the warm-up act was Dick Hughes, a giant of Australian jazz.
The pretty guileless transformation of the famous and elegant Aubrey Hotel into a Puma store says a lot about the changing face of Oxford Street. Most famous for its status as Sydney's top gay pub, it put on drag shows galore to entertain Sydney and international visitors, especially all through the 80s. Earlier on, it was also a music venue of note, remembered particularly for the resident band the Mangrove Boogie Kings, who were a favourite long-time Oxford Street and Sydney band. Ian Ryland's X was another very popular band there. Here we are, opposite Victoria Barracks at the beginning of a gentle climb up Oxford Street and towards the main retail area of Paddington, which is sort of the trendier sister suburb of the more worldly Darlinghurst stretch of Oxford Street. We're at the Fringe Bar, which remains one of the area's popular bars, and back in the 70s the pub was called the Unicorn. It became the launching pad for one of Australia's continuing and most popular successors in rock and roll history, Mental as Anything. Guitarist and singer Martin Plaza recalls how Greedy Smith joined in the fun, then joined the band.
It was the first regular one we did. We'd done a few birthday parties and union bashes at the college, where I actually met Reg at one of those. I'm not sure what it's called now. Then it became Alexander Mackie for a while. It was the National Art School at that point. And we were doing a few parties, and then we decided we wanted to play a bit more because it was sounding pretty good. And we approached the publican at the Unicorn, whose name was Ashley. He was a really nice chap. And he gave us Monday night, so we just took, we put someone on the door. I think we've charged 50 cents. And he got the bar, and so he was pretty happy with that. And we got to, and we played on the pool table, the legendary pool table, because it was such a tiny space. Everyone except for the drummer were on the pool table. Greedy wasn't an official member, but he became a member because he would hop up. He was a friend of Bird's, and he would hop up and play some harp occasionally in his big Stetson hat. And one night he was helping us bump all our gear out, and he left my amp head sitting on a speaker box on a fairly steep slope, gravity being what it is. My treasured wasp head like went smashing down onto the pavement. So he volunteered to sort of help out more often or every night, and pretty much forced his way into the band by smashing my amplifier.
Further up the road from the Unicorn or the Fringe, at numbers 182 to 184, and now fully redeveloped, is the Paddington Green Hotel, which operated as Brownies. During the 80s especially, there were great shows from local and overseas artists, including an evening described as Mayhem from the Gun Club on their only Australian tour. But it was perhaps best remembered as a venue for post-punk minimalist bands such as Makers of the Dead Travel Fast, the Severed Heads, Voight 465 or Scattered Order. Peter Simpson of the Teeny Weenies remembers the venue well.
Teeny Weenies originally, and then later Go Kids and Spectre's Revenge. and may even have played there with Hoi Polloi once.
Brownies.
The venue was great at Brownies. It was probably a really classic room that was had a decent sized stage and could hold more people than a lot of other venues. You went up this narrow staircase, which probably wouldn't pass fire regulations these days. It was right next to the Royal Women's Hospital, so there was always an issue about noise, and there were always complaints about noise, mainly as today, with people leaving the venue rather than the noise of the actual bands themselves.
Walking up towards the Town Hall, still on the northern side of Oxford Street, there's the still-standing Paddington RSL, which was a venue of extraordinary popularity for mid-sized touring acts, such as the first ever Henry Rollins Rollins Band tour, an oh-so-charming Jonathan Richman tour, and also the Chills from New Zealand. For local heroes, Died Pretty, there was a famous show in January 91, which included a free and now very rare giveaway 45 record, that is, which was only available at this Paddo RSL show. And across the road is Oxford Street's king or queen, or at least long-reigning monarch of venues, the Paddington Town Hall. The venue marked the April 3rd, 1977 double bill with the Saints, as well as Radio Birdman's final Australian show on the 12th of December before heading to the UK. It was going to be their last before their mid-90s reunion tour. The April show saw both the sets tear the house down, and Birdman's appearance in their uniforms and the banner bearing their symbol as a huge backdrop did cause some unknowing observers to ridiculously accuse them of Nazi leanings. But Rob Younger of Radio Birdman downplays any talk of bad blood between the Saints and Birdman, even though Dennis Tech of Birdman and Chris Bailey of the Saints didn't get on too well.
Yeah, Dennis would admit to that. He's never taken to Chris at all. Because I get along great with it. I get along great with the Saints, all of them. In fact, Dennis even played with Ivor in a band later on anyway. Yeah, you know, but, you know, they're, I've always considered them to be friends. There was never any animosity there. There was always run up the scale. I wouldn't overemphasise it, you know.
The December farewell show of Radio Birdman was a pretty strange affair. The crowd was probably three times the size of any other gig they'd played, with the majority of the audience maybe seeing the band for the very first time. The crowd was in a frenzied state, though the violence within the crowd and subsequent damage caused to the building and the cars outside after the show, and the blood splattered over the walls and down the banisters, all still remains as strong a memory as the searing set that Birdman played that night. Nobody who was there can apparently forget their rendition of Kraftwerk's Radioactivity or lead singer Rob Younger jumping into the crowd to punch out a heckler who'd been spitting at him. Anyway, it was the last hurrah from this country's perhaps greatest ever live band.
There was some blood about the place. Apparently people were cut on glass and so forth. And I think it, either during the gig or after it, people threw some chairs from inside out onto the street, out onto Oxford Street. So it would have made a bit of a mess and all of that. And I mean, because there were a lot of people actually couldn't get into that gig. I think they,
I was
told there was 1,000 people there. I don't know if that's by far the most people we'd ever have played to. You know, I mean, I think they knew it was going to be our last gig in the country.
Okay.
We did intend to play again when we came back. That was, we went to the UK, but yeah. We broke up. But yeah, so there were, I suppose there were a few fights and people probably just cutting themselves on, you know, walking on glass and so forth. And, you know, and there was just a few obnoxious people down the front and, you know, I've been asked about the, you know, the jump, why to jump off stage to clobber somebody, but it was really just because this bastard was spitting on me.
During the 60s, the Town Hall was also a venue for Ubu, who were pioneers of the psychedelic light show in Australia alongside their contemporary LSD Fog. Formed by Albie Toms, David Perry, Aggie Reed and John Clark at Sydney Uni in 1965, Ubu Films was Australia's first group dedicated to making, exhibiting and distributing experimental films. Although these four were the key members, the wider Ubu circle included many young filmmakers who had become, you know, very famous in later years, such as Matt Carroll, Peter Weir, Philip Noyce and Bruce Beresford. Ubu began doing their light shows mainly as a means of supplementing the funds for their film activities, but the popularity of their shows soon made it a major source of income and it effectively became their day job. It also naturally brought them into close and regular contact with leading underground rock groups on the Sydney scene, particularly Tamim Shud, The Id, Tully Again, The Nutwood Rug Band, Starving Wild Dogs and Pip proud. They put on lots of shows at the Town Hall with that type of musical lineup, including Arts Vietnam, which was an anti-war event, and the final underground dance there on January the 4th in 1969. Forward to the 80s, there were the Rat Parties at the Town Hall. The core of the self-styled recreational arts team was Jack Vidgen, Billy Yip and Reno Dahl. Vidgen was an energetic party thrower who had come to Sydney from Brisbane. Jack Vidgen became the de facto promoter and organiser of these so-called rat parties, which were the forerunners of the dance parties and raves of the 90s, I suppose. In the early 1980s, pub rock was still the mainstream and dance music was an underground phenomenon. Any music that utilised electronic instruments other than guitars was regarded as weird or avant-garde. But rat party enthusiasts preferred recorded electronic music and dance music provided by pioneering DJs like Tim Ritchie or Robert Rasich and Pee Wee Ferris. Ignored by major record labels, the dance movement perhaps followed a similar path to the punk ethic, very do-it-yourself. Each party had a special name, usually conceived by Billy Yip, incorporating the word rat in its title. Although they were held in many extraordinary locations, Paddington Town Hall was the prized venue for several of the very best rat parties. Tim Ritchie.
Well, it came out of Jack Vidgen was the name of the guy who was behind it. They had someone looking after the graphics and someone looking after the technology, but he was the sort of artistic mind. And I think it started in Balmain, the first one, for some of his mates. And then it blossomed to this, which was the first sort of big financial one. But they hadn't had much experience in setting these things up. And so they put Robert Rasich and I were playing together. We were supposed to play one after the other, but because they hadn't ever worked with DJs and decks correctly, they didn't know that if you put them on top of scaffolding with lots of bass drums below it, that the needle wouldn't stay on the record. And so it took one of us sort of holding down the turntable around the sides as the other one did their work. So it was a night of not particularly great mixing, but it was a night of that started really, because it's where they made their money the first time for the Rat Team, started something that went on to pack out really big venues. What was happening in the Oxford Street scene was being able to merge gay culture and hetero culture together. And so when the rat parties were probably the first set of parties that did that, where it was perfectly valid to be a gay person dancing next to a hetero person and vice versa. And there was none of that, as the 80s were, you know, quite good for that kind of thing. Anyway, there was no demarc about what you're allowed to do and enjoy as there was prior to that and really post that.
Thank you for listening. Or at least walking the city of Sydney rock and roll walk of fame and shame. And as they say, remember the fame, because the shame lasts forever. The Rock and Roll Walk of Fame and Shame is produced by Hugh Liney, Ashley Russell and Frank Cottrell and proudly presented by the City of Sydney. The podcast celebrates the history of rock music of the 60s, 70s, 80s in the culturally diverse and exciting Oxford Street Strip.